You're listening to Stateside on Michigan Radio. I'm Lester Graham. In the 1920s, the demand for rubber went way up. With more cars being made, the auto manufacturers needed rubber for tires, hoses, and so on. Henry Ford decided he'd go right to the source for his rubber. In 1928, he planned a rubber tree plantation in what essentially was a model Midwestern town along the Amazon River in Brazil. He called it Fordlandia. Simon Romero is Brazil bureau chief for the New York Times, and he recently visited Fordlandia, or what's left of it, and he wrote about it this week. So what did you find when you finally got the chance to visit Fordlandia?
Fordlandia was really one of the most incredible places I've ever been in Brazil. I'd been to the Amazon numerous times before. I've explored parts of various river basins up there. I've seen remnants of lost civilizations. And I've also come across ruins in different parts of Brazil, but I never saw something like this, which was really this American-style Midwestern town that Henry Ford had built in the 1920s on the banks of the Tapajós River. And the first thing that you see is this huge water tower when you arrive by riverboat from the city of Santarém. It takes 6 hours to get there upriver. And there's a huge warehouse that's been abandoned that has words painted on it that read, "Welcome to Fordlandia." It's really incredible because you actually have around 2,000 people now living in the town, some of whom live in the ruins that were abandoned by the Americans at the end of World War II. So it really is just a fascinating place.
So we're talking about this town had sidewalks, street lamps, a hospital, bungalows, which you wrote were still being used, still being lived in. Trying to build a Midwestern town in the jungle seems like a pretty naive thing to do, considering nature has a way of reclaiming what's taken. How'd that work out for Ford and his people?
Well, it was plagued by problems from the start. They had to recruit workers from around Brazil to work at the rubber plantation outside of the town. And Henry Ford had a certain idea of what type of values should be hewed to in the town that he was building. He promoted, for example, readings of poetry that was translated into Portuguese, poems by Longfellow and Emerson. He really disliked music like jazz that was emerging strongly in the 1920s and 30s and had the workers do square dancing. And they had to also stick to a diet that he set for them of canned peaches and browned rice and food like that. They also had their working lives tightly controlled by managers. And all of this blew up at one point into a full-scale riot in 1930, and workers in the town destroyed much of it. They destroyed time clocks, they cut electricity to the plantation, and they actually drove some of the American managers into the jungle. They had to flee for their lives. So it was a place that had lots of problems. Nevertheless, Ford advanced with his project and had the place built. It was really quite stunning. It had, asphalted roads and a working sewage system and even a hospital built by Albert Kahn, the incredible architect who designed many buildings in 20th century Detroit. Sadly, some of those buildings are in ruins, including the hospital built by Kahn, which I explored, and it's just really a tragedy to see it in that state.
Now, the whole purpose, harvesting rubber, raising these trees, also seems to have been handled badly. Tell us about that.
Well, Ford was extremely skeptical of relying on the advice of experts, including agronomists, who could have counseled him and his managers on strategies to grow rubber trees properly in the jungle. Of course, the rubber tree is native to the Brazilian Amazon, but seeds were taken outside of Brazil in the 1870s, giving birth to rubber plantations around Asia in places like Malaysia and Indonesia and Sri Lanka. That devastated Brazil's rubber industry, but those plantations became very successful. And Ford thought that he would have a fairly easy time replicating that success on an industrial scale in the Brazilian Amazon. And it was really the opposite that happened. They planted trees too close to one another, making for a perfect environment for leaf blight to take place. It was a paradise for the insects that preyed on rubber trees. So it was really just plagued by one problem after another. Eventually, they did bring in expert advice, but it was really too late. By the time the 1940s came around, they realized that their operations would never be profitable, and they sold the entire venture at a huge loss to the Brazilian government in 1945.
So that's when Ford pulled out of Fordlandia. The people that are living in Fordlandia now, you said are about 2,000 folks. What's life like there?
You know, it's incredibly relaxed, actually. It's a small town. You know, you have people, ironically, not getting around in cars in a town that was founded by Henry Ford, but largely on motorbikes and bicycles or just walking around. It's quite poor. You know, people survive either on government subsidies that are provided to the poor in Brazil, or they farm small plots of land, crops like manioc, where rubber trees once grew, or they graze, you know, tropical cattle on small parcels of land. So they're really just scraping by. The town did have a placid feel to it. People are extremely friendly. They're welcoming. People welcomed me into their homes, including squatters who have moved into the homes on what was once called Palm Avenue, this sort of stately thoroughfare where the management once lived. And those homes were falling apart and were being preyed upon by looters. And so you had several families of squatters who have moved in and essentially salvaged those homes, making them very pleasant places to live in. And they welcomed me inside and gave me interviews. It's really a very pleasant place, I would say.
I'm wondering what you think the lesson to be learned is from Fordlandia.
Well, not only was Ford skeptical of relying on agronomists for expertise, but he was also extremely skeptical of history. At one point, he actually told the New York Times in an interview in 1921 that history is bunk. Those were his exact words. And he was really in favor of sort of barreling ahead and very sure of his own plans. The Amazon, however, is a place that tends to be extremely complex for these large-scale developments that have really failed to take off time and again. So if he had perhaps relied on the advice of historians as well, he could have learned about the pitfalls, the challenges involved in operating in the world's largest tropical forest. And trust me, there are many.
Simon Romero reports for the New York Times. The article is titled "Deep in Brazil's Amazon, Exploring the Ruins of Ford's Fantasy Land." Thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Thanks so much for having me.